It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation. I am Kim Munson, and welcome. We are turning over a new leaf. My show is becoming the Kim Munson Show. Let's have a conversation, and I'm very excited about it. Thrilled to have in studio with me Roger Bianco. Roger, you are the inaugural guest on new adventure that we're going into.
That's great. Thanks, Kim. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
And congratulations on the new show, the new brand, the new everything.
Well, you know, as we looked at it, you know, initially there were three of us. There was Jill Vecchio and Molly and I, and Jill stepped back a couple of years into the adventure, and then Molly stepped back at the end of 2018. And I said, truth in advertising, at my age, it should really be the AmeriHen, but it just didn't have the same ring to it.
Not as catchy.
Not as catchy. So we are doing this rebranding. And then my other show, the World War II Project, is becoming America's Veteran Stories, so that we can start to add in stories of Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, Iraq, Afghanistan, peacetime, all the conflicts, because there are so many stories out there, Roger, that need to be heard.
Yeah, that's a great project. I hope that's having an impact on people.
I think it is. And, you know, so anyway, it's a new adventure. We're very excited about it. But I need to say thank you to some people. First of all, Zach has, it's amazing the amount of time that he's put into these websites. And go to kimmunson.com. That's MONSON.com. All of the shows are actually going to be there, where you can click on the link if you missed a show, or if you have friends that go, 6 o'clock is too early, 10 o'clock at night's too late. Well, guess what? You can go to my website, Kim Munson. That's MONSON.com. And the shows will all be there. And if you go to the website, it is, I think it's absolutely spectacular. And then, of course, the other website is America's Veteran Stories, and it is awesome as well. So, Zach, thank you for all the time that you put in. Steve and Charlie and the whole Crawford team, you guys have just done amazing work on making this whole thing happen. And thank you to you as well, Steve, and the whole team. And then, of course, to Patty and to Keith, I appreciate you guys immensely as well. So thank you. So this is a new day. The Kim Munson Show, let's have a conversation. We're going to be having a conversation in the third and fourth segment, Roger, about a piece that is the inaugural piece on KimMunson.com.
Okay.
And that is, here's to you, Mr. Madison.
Here's to you, Mr. Madison. Yeah, he got some things, I think, pretty toned right into reality when he wrote some of the things that he did. And we'll talk about, kind of take property rights that we've been talking about last few shows and roll it into the idea of arbitrary government and compare and contrast a couple of different instances and why that's not good. I mean, and Madison's kind of saw this back in the 1780s and 1790s. And so we'll take a peek into Federalist 62 or 52, I think it's 62, where he wrote about the dangers of arbitrary government. What will this result in? Not good. And I think that we're on that course that Madison expressly didn't want us to go on, and there's reasons for it.
Yeah, and so we need to understand it. That's really the first thing is to understand the issues. And really the founder's wisdom has been tapped down with this narrative that's been going on in education and media and also
New York Times,
in the whole works. And so truth has been tapped down. And so that's why we do this show, is to try to help you get your brains around these issues so that you can converse with friends, family, colleagues, your kids when they come home from school about these important issues, because the kind of the non-truth side wants to cloud all this. They want to confuse people. And, you know, folks are so busy living their lives, Roger.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. It's easy to miss this stuff. And excuse me, it's easy to go along, quite frankly, to think, oh, that's good, a downtown redevelopment project, jobs, wonderful, there'll be good restaurants I can go to. But there is a cost potentially on the other side of that stuff.
There is ultimately, and so we are looking at these issues as freedom versus force, mm-hmm. force versus freedom. And many times, what we see politicians and pundits and professors and interested parties and bureaucrats is they wrap up force in a nice little package with a bow on it that makes people think that it's something good. When and force ultimately doesn't work out very well, because if something's such a great idea, you really don't need to use force.
Yeah, no government official ever says, I'm doing this because I want to force you to live life the way I want you to live it. I mean, they're never going to just say that. There's always some euphoric kind of reasoning and explanation, and usually attached to some pretty kitschy phrases that people get to understand and keep in their minds and can repeat to someone else. And so it's kind of, government force with a little bit of marketing, with some messaging, with some government money that people can compete with. And so off you go. It's a formula.
It is a formula. So we'll continue to unpack that and have a conversation about that. And I want to say thank you to you listeners out there. I've gotten so many email messages, so many things on Facebook at the whole rebranding. You each, you're treasured, you're valued. And we strive for excellence on this show, and I really appreciate each of you. Strive for excellence today. You are treasured. You are valued. You have a purpose, and so go out there and do that. So in honor of your piece, Roger Bianco, here's to you, Mr. Madison. I thought, well, let's look at the Madisons for some inspiration and for some humor.
Okay.
Okay, ready? So first thing, this is from Dolly Madison. She was the first lady. She was married to James Madison. And when the British were marching on Washington, D.C., she apparently was one of the last people to leave the White House. And she saved the portrait of George Washington from being looted by British troops during the War of 1812. Mm-hmm. And as she was leaving, she said, "It is done. The precious portrait placed in the hands of the gentleman for safekeeping." And she risked her life to do that. And do you know much about Dolly Madison?
From what I've read, she was the personality in the couple. James wasn't necessarily the most outgoing guy and not in great health all the time. He was somewhat of a frail person, and Dolly was the bigger-than-life personality that people were drawn to. Well, he was kind of the sidecar to her.
Well, and I think he was much older than her. She actually was a widower. She was widow. She was married at the age of 21 and had two children. And her husband and one of the young sons died on the same day, I think they said, when she was 25 years old. Mm. Interestingly enough, apparently James Madison saw her on the street. And at the time, he was friends with Aaron Burr, who shot Hamilton, and he asked Aaron Burr to introduce them. And apparently she was a bigger woman.
Yeah.
And apparently she was the life of the party. And so I was looking at this, and this is from the Smithsonian Magazine. And so I thought this was funny. And it says, at Montpelier in the White House, the constant presence of younger generations meant that James Madison and Dolly Madison never took themselves too seriously. Upon receiving stockings too small for her generous proportions, she reported that the hose will not fit even my darling little husband. When Dolly challenged a young girl to a foot race, she assured her that Madison and I often run races around here. And a house guest reported that the former first couple sometimes romped and teased each other like two children. But this one I couldn't believe. The guest added that Dolly, who was stronger as well as larger than he, sometimes could and did seize his hands, draw him up on her back, and go around the room with him. We are left to imagine the accompanying shrieks and laughter. Can you imagine the president and his wife, or former president and his wife, she having him on the back, her back like a child? I mean, she must have been something else.
I believe that because, even if she wasn't, as this article says, stronger as well as larger than he was not a large person. Mm-hmm. I understand he was very small and might have had seizures and had a whole bunch of health issues. Mm-hmm. But testament to the power of the brain, quite frankly,
he was a very big smart thinker.
Yeah, big thinker, very smart man. And wouldn't it be fun to see Melania with President Trump?
Good luck on that
one. Good luck on that one. That might hurt her a bit.
Good luck on that one. So, hey, Patty has does amazing research, and this isn't really funny, but the first headline that I wanted to mention, Tyler Sandberg apparently put this on his Twitter, and they caught this. If you can believe this, The Democrat elections clerk in Arapahoe County passed out a flyer recently in Aurora that on it, it said, vote early and vote often.
Let's hope that was a joke.
And, well, George Brockler tweeted, is this a joke or is it Chicago? And then the...
If you don't mind, I'm born and raised in the Chicago area. Even Chicago wouldn't do that. Even Chicago wouldn't be so overt about vote early, vote often, if that is indeed what this guy was doing. That's really bad.
It's really, really... And, you know, that's another thing, Roger, that is so frustrating, is that I don't think that people realize that each election is really important. And the county clerk and recorder is the one that is put in charge, as well as the Secretary of State, with making sure that we maintain the integrity of our elections. And so that's why this is such a problem, is that, in fact, the people that are supposed to be in charge of making sure we have integrity in our elections actually put on a flyer to encourage people to vote early and to vote often. Yeah. I mean, it's really disturbing. So then Tyler Sandberg did say that there was a reply. This flyer was used once at Global Fest 2019. And after feedback on the language, we made corrections. Here is our new flyer with better language. We apologize for any upset this may have caused. What? Mm. We apologize for any upset. That's one of those things that's not really an apology.
Yeah, no, that's a... It's a sidestep,
it seems. It is a sidestep. So anyway, we wanted to make sure that you knew that. That's of great concern. Next thing, you know, transportation is one of the things that I watch on a regular basis, because freedom of mobility is freedom for people to go after their hopes and dreams. And the planners, and planning always has to have force, ultimately. And so here we have, this is from CPR. That says fares don't cover the price of buses and trains, which leaves RTD a big budget dilemma. They say that the $3 you pay to ride the local bus or the $10.50 it costs you to ride the A-line to Denver International Airport, those costs may seem high, but collectively they don't come close to covering what it costs RTD to keep its vehicles moving. RTD brought in $143 million in revenue in 2018, according to a new staff report, against $777 million in operating costs. That amounts to a net subsidy of $634 million, much of it which is covered by sales tax revenue. Factoring in depreciation, RTD calculates that fares cover just under 25% of what it cost the agency to provide services in 2018. According to a Federal Transit Administration analysis of 2017 data, the national average is 35%. I think all transit agents on the agencies on the planet are pretty much subsidized, said board member Claudia Folska at a September 17th meeting. And I guess for us, the question is, how much can we afford to subsidize? And who's we?
Yeah.
We as the taxpayers. And so, Steve, what's your thoughts about this?
Well, first of all, a question. That the subsidy figure that you just mentioned, does it fully cover that difference, or is it just kind of goes that way and there's still a deficit of some sort?
You know, it's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. But the other thing you have to realize is that they're just talking about operating. They're not talking about constructing this.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so what they do is they look to the federal government. They look to our neighbors to pay for something here regionally that people are saying, you know, we don't really want it because we're not really riding it. But you can look at the congestion on the roads and people are voting and they say, I like my personal vehicle. I like the flexibility. I like the safety. And so we need to make sure that we have our politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties are making sure that they're working towards enhancing that freedom of mobility. Producer Steve, your thought?
You graciously allow for a little snarkiness on this show, and I'm grateful because I usually am the provider. Don't forget, earlier this summer, the Aurora Sentinel, which is not necessarily known for its conservative writing, on the front cover had a picture of a light rail train and a new definition or for the acronym RTD, ridership trending downward.
Mm. Well, and so on that next note, I have one other headline I want to mention, then we're going to go to break. And that is from Colorado Politics. It says Denver is going to convert more lanes downtown into bus only. says Denver is taking more steps to help buses and bicycles navigate downtown. The city plans on changing a car lane on 15th Street into a bus-only lane between Court Place and Larimer Street. The Denver Post reports the same change will be applied to 17th Street later this year between Market Street and Broadway. Denver will be adding further protections for bicyclists traveling on 15th Street in light of a fatal traffic accidents this year. Left turn lanes that overlap with the bike lanes will be eliminated. Rubber curbs will be placed along the bike lane, and bollards will be added near the corners of intersections, according to the Post. So let's just connect these two. Mm-hmm. So ridership is down, and so that means people still want to be in their cars. And then Denver is converting many of the car lanes to bus lanes. Roger, how could that make sense?
There is no need for either of these government entities, the City of Denver or the RTD, to listen to the people driving their cars. There's no need for them to listen to government forces because they have the market forces because they have the trough. They can go back to the public trough. So you have evidence of struggle at minimum, failure at maximum with RTD. No one's jumping in those trains. And I think that people, and it's actually, in my opinion, it's a good thing that people are sticking with their cars because, to your point, cars are maximum freedom. That's where they get the freedom. I see
freedom.
Yeah,
I love
cars
it.
Are maximum freedom, and I see a lot of people in downtown Denver zooming around on those kind of ride share, mm-hmm. easy or car to go, which is a fabulous mm-hmm. idea. And the those little scooters mm-hmm. that they have. There's at least a couple of companies that are allowed to operate down there. But so you got this failed or struggling business model here that costs $634 million, and there's no incentive to listen to the market forces. There's no private entity that can come in and bring in competition to improve the system because they can't subsidize themselves at $634 million. That's a failed business model. And then you have the City of Denver trying to pursue that exact same city, that model, by forcing people to get people frustrated by closing down lanes to try to force them into buses. I don't know. It seems like we would be better off if the government let go of control.
You know, and one other thing, and I can't remember the exact amount, but the City of Denver, I think it was, had been subsidizing one of the, like, the bicycle companies, like, to the tune of $800,000. So once again, market forces aren't involved with that. You're having government come in and take money from one person, and they're giving it to this company over here to try to bolster them up. If it's such a good idea, you shouldn't have to subsidize it. And so this is really frustrating. And I think you just nailed it. Being able to have your car is maximum freedom. And the planners are not interested in having people have maximum freedom. And just to note, as I was heading over here this morning, Steve, I saw four cars on an RTD light rail.
That's the H line. Yes.
I didn't see one person on it. Not one person. So there you have it. And you know what? Hey, I'm way over on time. I guess I'm just very, very
wound up
today. So we're going to go to break. Thrilled to have in studio with me Roger Bianco. His important piece at kimmunson.com, that's MONSON.com, is here's to you, Mr. Madison. We're going to go to break. When we come back, some more headlines.
At Hooters, you can watch the games with all your buddies. And when your buddies are the world-famous Hooters girls, there's always plenty of ice-cold beer and those craveable wings that'll knock your taste buds into next Tuesday. Hooters girls know plenty about football, but we really know the fans who live for it. So hang out with all your buddies all season long at Hooters, your official hangout for game day.
Catch all the games at Hooters and enjoy a Bud or Bud Light draft with 10 boneless wings, just $10. Dine for two with the pitcher and nachos, just $20.
Don't miss Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Join Kim Munson at Water's Edge Winery in Centennial or Colorado Cork and Keg in Castle Rock. In Fort Collins, attend Vino and Veritas at Ginger and Baker. Kim Munson would like to thank Presidential Wealth Management Loveland, Presidential Wealth Management Greenwood Village, Tina Francone with Straightforward Shooting, and Grand Lake U.S. Constitution Week for their generous support. Vino and Veritas, Wine and Truth, a study of the Federalist Papers. Sign up today.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
Hey, welcome back. I am Kim Munson. Let's have a conversation. Thrilled to have in studio with me, Roger Bianco.
Good morning.
It's great to have you here. And your excellent op-ed, Here's to You, Mr. Madison, is on my website, kimmunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And for friends that don't like to get up early or stay up late to hear the show on KLZ 560, you can go to that website, and all the shows will be there a little bit later today. One other headline that I wanted to get through for sure this morning, and this is from the Times Call up in Longmont. Longmont City Council is to consider electric and water rate increases. Now, my friends, when government gets involved in something, the price goes up and the supply goes down. And Longmont has been very aggressive in continued more and more government control. They were one of the first ones to get into the broadband business as well here in Colorado. But take a look at this. It says the average Longmont residential utility customer now pays $65.25 a month for electricity and $38.71 a month for water, according to city staff. After a series of presentations and discussions during several council meetings since April, city utility staff has recommended that beginning in January, Longmont charge that average residential customer $69.43 a month, which is a 6.4% increase, and $42.21 a month for water, which is a 9% increase. You know, Roger, what I see happening is the everyday hardworking Coloradan that's working out there, they're driving up and down. First of all, you've got government that wants to get them out of their personal vehicle. So they're making it more expensive. They're using rules and regulations to make it more expensive to operate your individual vehicle, trying to push you onto bikes and buses and other subsidized things, modes of transportation, so that they can control your mobility instead of you having your choice. But then we've seen Longmont here. And well, and we just mentioned that's subsidized to the tune of $664 million. Somebody pays for that.
Yeah.
It's everyday hardworking people paying more in sales tax.
Whether they ride it or they don't.
Whether they ride it or they don't. So here, Longmont City Council, this is a pretty significant increase. 9% on water and a 6.4% increase in electricity. Those are basic services that make our lives better. And Longmont's getting into the broadband business. So you're going to see probably, increases in broadband. And you've got private companies that have been working in that. And I know some people, you know, get very frustrated with some of the services that they get from a private company. But a private company, ultimately, you would have another choice. When government's involved, they try to tap down competition so that they can control the market, and then they up the price.
Yeah, government is against monopoly unless it's the government itself providing the monopoly. I thought this was funny, too. Revenues from the higher rates will allow Longmont to upgrade its electric metering system and improve customer information system used for utility billing. So they're going to charge more money so they can charge more money. that was an interesting little take on what they're going to do. But this is similar. It's the same theme that we just discussed with regard to RTD. You're not going to have any private entity come in and try to help people get around, largely in any mass, at least largely because they can subsidize. Longmont is not going to, the Longmont getting into broadband. I wonder if any elected official would take it upon themselves to pass a bill with certain order to pass some ordinance or bill or a law that says in certain areas, the government just simply is prohibited from entering into these areas, from competing into these areas. Maybe broadband services is one of them. I want people who rely on my money and who need me to pay them to do something to be providing me the service, not government officials who can kind of come and go and subsidize. I think that will make those private entities, it does make those private entities more responsive to me. One of the issues is I see some private entities starting to behave more like government, quite frankly, and they're not being as responsive to people. But
well, that's where you have public-private partnerships, yeah, where they're not as responsible to everyday hardworking people. I've determined just a couple of things, and we're going to go to Jason McBride with Presidential Wealth Management. But I'd mentioned this at in Veritas last night. With the new branding, I needed to get a new tax ID number. And so we went to the automated system with the IRS, and it was down. They said, okay, you have to go and get this manually. So I sent it in manually. 2 weeks later, I still didn't have it. Right. And so we had to actually reach out to the IRS and did finally get it. So it took about 3 weeks just to get a tax ID number. Just imagine if you needed cancer treatment or a colonoscopy. These are the people that want to be in charge of our healthcare system. Right. And the incentives are wrong. There's a lot of fine people that work in government.
Sure.
But the system, the incentives are upside down because they don't have to deliver results. They don't have to deliver service. I was at Chick-fil-A last week, and I mean, there's cars everywhere and people, wanting to get their food at lunch. And my gosh, they had people out there that was taking your order, then taking your money. And, I was in and out in like 5 minutes. I'm thinking maybe we should put Chick-fil-A in charge of all this stuff instead of government bureaucrats. So, right. Jason McBride, what do you think about that?
I think the government is absolutely expert at doing colonoscopies.
Ouch.
So we should leave them in charge of that because it's one thing they are good at.
You got me on that one, Jason McBride. Okay.
Good morning.
Top of the morning to you. Let's talk about something a little more serious. We were talking about Roth IRAs last week, and you said that Roths are more liquid than traditional IRAs. How exactly is that?
Well, Kim, any contributions that a person makes to a Roth are 100% liquid at any time, and a lot of folks don't realize that. It's only the earnings that have any restrictions at all. So let's say you contributed $5,000 to a Roth at age 40, and you needed the money only a year later, and it's grown to $5,500. Well, you can take out the $5,000 you put in, no tax, no penalty, no matter your age, no matter how short of a time you put the money in. With a regular IRA, you're going to pay tax plus a 10% penalty on that $5,000 withdrawal.
Okay, so what if I put the money in over several years? Is it the same deal?
Yeah, it is. Let's say at 40, you put in $5,000 a year for 10 years, so you have put in $50,000 total, and in year 11, when you're age 51, let's say it's worth $65,000. You can, again, take out that $50,000, no tax, no penalty, and with a regular IRA, you'd owe tax plus a 10% penalty.
Well, you know what, Jason, that seems like a good idea. Let's say, you want to take some money out for your kids for college or maybe to help pay for a wedding or something like that. I mean, that seems like that would be a really good thing to do. But what about the earnings? Can you do that as well?
Well, the earnings, you have to be age 59 and a half, and you have to have had any Roth for 5 years. And once you meet both of those qualifications, then the entire account, including the earnings, is tax-free.
Okay, so college savings then, is this better than a 529?
Well, I think it is. Let's say you have a young couple, they've got a brand new baby, they're age 25, and they both start Roths. Now, they could contribute $6,000 a year, but maybe they can't afford that right away, especially with a new baby. But let's say, Kim, over the next 18 years, each of them manages to put $4,000 a year on average into their Roth. So they put in a total of $144,000. If they grow it at about 5% a year, by the time that little angel's ready for college, those Roths are worth $225,000.
Well, that's a pretty good amount.
Well, it is. But see, now they can withdraw the $144,000 they contributed, tax and penalty free, to use for those college costs if they want to.
But what about the 529? Where does that come in? Don't you get a tax break for that?
Well, you get a little tax break when you a state tax break when you put the money in. But in my opinion, you don't use it during the growth phase, because what if your little angel doesn't turn out to be the college type? So if you don't use the 529 money for education, there's all kinds of stiff penalties for withdrawing it. So now watch this. You open the 529 when the kid is about to start college. So let's say the tuition is $25,000 the first year. Well, you don't take it out of the Roth and pay it directly to the college. You take it out of the Roth, deposit it into the 529, which now gives you that state tax break, and then you turn around and pay the tuition from the 529. You just use it as a pass-through to get the state tax break.
And so any money that's not used for college just stays in the Roth and keeps growing tax-free. That is really smart, Jason McBride.
Yeah, I mean, Roths are just the best, and this is a heck of a lot more flexible than trapping the money in a 529, which also usually has limited investment options, while a Roth does not.
Okay, well, Jason McBride, you're very wise, and I would suggest if people would like to sit down with you for a discovery session to just talk about these strategies. I mean, just think about it. You could keep more money in your pocket. Would recommend to do that. So you can give Natalie a call today at 7:30. She's at the boards there at Presidential Wealth Management. That number is 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. This seems really smart, Jason McBride.
Well, I know it's surprising it came from me, but once in a while, lightning strikes.
No, great, great deal. So we will talk to you soon, and you have a great day, Jason McBride.
Thanks, Kim. Have a great show.
Thank you. And we're going to go to break. Roger Bianco's in studio. I can't wait to talk about this piece. Here's to you, Mr. Madison. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for news, not propaganda? Ready for a news source you can actually trust? How about a news site that doesn't want to sell you a subscription? Visit CompleteColorado.com to see all the latest news from around Colorado. Complete Colorado's staff scours news sources from around the state and nation to bring you only the top stories that affect you right here in our great state. Updated three times a day, CompleteColorado.com has full-time reporters doing original investigations and reporting like newspapers used to do, as well as opinion and political commentary from a variety of Colorado voices. And CompleteColorado.com is the only place to read columnist Mike Rosen. Always fresh content, always free, always informed. CompleteColorado.com, your complete source for Colorado news.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email Kim at KimMunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at KimMunson, MONSON.com.
Hey, welcome back. I am Kim Munson, and let's have a conversation. There's important things to talk about out there, and thrilled to have in studio with my inaugural rebranding, Roger Bianco.
I've not been the inaugural anything for anyone, so this is cool.
Well, there's a first time for everything.
Yeah.
So you've written an excellent op-ed, Arbitrary Government is Bad Government. Here's to you, Mr. Madison. Before we get to that, though, you said during break that you had an example regarding government and private enterprise.
Yeah, well, it contrasts two different instances, and I'll try to do this quickly here. My wife and I adopted our son overseas. Long story short, my wife, they sent the paperwork to the wrong place, and we couldn't get them to send it to the right place. That is the Department of the Immigration Bureaucracy. And my wife was on hold for an hour and 45 minutes with a government bureaucrat trying to get that ironed out. And just, I mean, outheld a bureaucrat, right? So the will of a mother versus the will of a bureaucrat, the will of the mother wins, right? But very non-responsive, and it took an awful lot of doing, and we almost didn't get the paperwork sent over at all, and the whole adoption almost fell through because government was non-responsive. There's no incentive to. Now, yesterday or 2 days, 2 or 3 days ago, Amazon, the guy at Amazon left a package at the bottom of our driveway, claimed in the delivery receipt that he had handed it to someone, that he had hand-delivered it to a resident. And we didn't know the package was there. My wife was expecting it, wondering where it was. called Amazon, said, hey, this guy said it was hand-delivered. It wasn't. We found out it wasn't because our neighbor saw it. It was kind of hidden behind a couple bushes. She saw it and brought it up to us. So the kindness of our neighbor is what really delivered the product. So she complained and said, this guy lied. He didn't give it to anyone in my home, me, my wife, or our kids. Next day, an Amazon package comes. It's on the front porch. Now, I don't know if that was the same person or what it was, but from a consumer's viewpoint, it looks like Amazon was immediately responsive, and the national government of the United States, the Immigration Department, was unbelievably difficult to deal with. The private sector, responsive to something as inconsequential as one package. The public sector, non-responsive to something as consequential as adopting a son. And so it seems very clear to me that I want the private sector in charge of a lot more, and the government's nose out of it. But anyway, who knows?
Could I just I want to make just a quick comment then. Mm-hmm. And that is we have seen this, and I think this has been under our noses, the detabering of counties and special districts and towns and cities. I don't think people realize that. And that means that they're trying to cut the teeth out of the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, which was passed in 1992 by the people of Colorado, that says basically three things. We expect three things out of you, government, and that is basically consent. You have to ask us if you want to raise our taxes, if you want to incur debt that we have to pay off, or if you want to keep our tax refunds above a very generous formula of population plus inflation. And what we are seeing is these PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties don't want to have to ask us. They don't want the transparency. And to give this whole entity a blank check with Proposition CC or with Issue 1A out in Jefferson County, the answer has to be no. No blank check on that. So anyway, let's jump in here because arbitrary government, they don't really care.
Yeah.
They don't really care.
Well, and so I should bring in the idea of where I first learned a lot of this information. It was through Leadership Program of the Rockies. And so we've talked about Leadership Program of the Rockies last couple of times.
And you and I are both alumni.
We're both alum. I went through 2014 and you were 2012. Class of 2020 is going to kick off here in another couple of weeks. And so congratulations to those 65 souls who got into the program. And I don't know how many people can get in there, but it's a highly competitive process. And so part of what you talk about in the program is the importance of rights. It's kind of woven through a lot of the content. And one of the rights that you spend a decent amount of time on in a class is a discussion on property. And you talk in the class about Kelo. Property rights being not just rights that influence or apply to the things that you own, your home or your things, but your mind, your religious expression, the things you create with your mind. That's called a lot of times today intellectual property. And what we've discussed, Kim, is the how government has begun the trend of a long trend, actually, of violating these rights, taking people's homes, compensating them, which some people think is probably fair. You know, you want to compensate someone, that's fair, but it may be market, it may not be market. But even the compensation kind of skirts the issue of, is it right for the government even to take that property? It's not theirs. It's the property of the individual person. And so
and the founders addressed this in the Constitution, though.
Did I think it was the Fifth Amendment?
Yeah, I think so. And that is that if in and you mentioned this, there's a difference between public use and public purpose,
yes,
because there may be times where government may need to, you know, take property for something that would be of national. Well-being, national general welfare, if
you will. Something that everyone can use. And Justice Thomas, in his dissent in the Kelo decision, made a point to say that by virtue of the fact that the founders said, you know, they put parameters on it. That meant they intended to put a limit on government takings of private property. The public use standard was the limit. And so the debate is, well, what does public use mean? Currently, the law of the land is that public use means a vague promise of tax revenue. Like in the Kelo case itself, the idea was that the New London Development Corporation in Connecticut took about 70 homes or a few dozen homes. bulldozed all of them, because they ultimately won the case and went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And but there was no built. There's nothing built, to my knowledge. Even today, there's still nothing built.
So what you're talking about, Roger, is in the Constitution, where it basically says if government needs to take property, and they're thinking about something for like national security, or in the case of
military use,
or, you know, when Ike Eisenhower came back from World War II, he realized that we did not have a highway system like he saw in Germany, where Germany could move troops, it can move goods and services quickly on their interstate highway systems. And he's like, oh my gosh, we need to have something like that here in America. And so that's where they started the interstate highway system.
Right.
And the federal gas tax. So it was like a use tax. The gas tax would be used for the roads and bridges. Now what we have seen is we've seen these PBIs that really want to get people out of their cars. They've been shaving money out of the gas tax money for years to put into trains and into bike paths, because that's what they perceive is better.
Yeah.
And so now what you're describing with Kelo is you have government getting in bed with basically kind of private enterprise. They're now calling these public-private partnerships.
Yeah.
And
which is a public entity.
It is a public entity, and it is government picking winners and losers. And here, what happened in New London, Connecticut, is in the guise of wanting to create revenue.
Yeah.
They took people's homes.
Yeah, they took people's homes, and that was in the guise of economic development, right? This whole idea of job creation and economic, who could be against that? Now, contrast that to another case that we've talked about here. In fact, I think we talked about it last time.
Tom's Diner,
right? So Tom has had this diner for years, leveraged his family's future to buy this thing 20-some-odd years ago for $800,000.
24 hours a day.
24 hours. And the restaurant business, nights, evenings, and weekends. I mean, it's nights, holidays, and weekends. It's a difficult business to be in. He made something of that restaurant. It's a retro restaurant. And now he wants to sell it to a development corporation to build housing in the city of Denver. Housing in the city of Denver. I would think that the city of Denver would be all on that and say, go, Tom, go, and give him two thumbs up and put him through some kind of streamlined bureaucratic thing to get it done. But no, a few people walk by the restaurant and they look at the structure of it and they like the way it makes them feel. And so based on that and the idea that they feel they have some sort of ownership of Tom's Diner, they went to the Denver Preservation Commission, some bureaucratic thing that was created to quote unquote preserve. And that entity voted unanimously, not one single dissenting vote, not one thought to the hard work that Tom put in, not one thought to the risk that he took, completely discouraging of entrepreneurship. They voted unanimously to say, no, Tom, because these people feel a certain way about your diner. You can't do what you want to do with your land, with your property, which is to develop it, right? So this is the point of this. We've been going through this, I thought, gosh darn, how crazy is this? You've got government, I mean, it compounds in its badness. Government on one side in New London, Connecticut, violating people's property rights in the name of economic development to try to stimulate economic development. In Tom's Diner's case, we have government wanting to violate people's property rights, Tom's property rights, on the other side to stop economic development, to stop the development of needed housing in Denver. So government's trying to violate property rights to stimulate economic development. Government's trying to violate property rights to stop economic development on the other side. If you're someone in the private sector, you know, and you want to open a restaurant or you want to buy land to do something, to build, to develop, I mean, you look at that, I would look at that and I would go, well, what the heck would government do to me? Would they take my property to do X or would they take my property to do Y? Either way, they're violating property rights, but it's for different reasons. And so I think this is getting at an important concept that James Madison wrote about in Federalist 62. And I'm going to do something that I don't think is good radio, but I'll try it anyway, which is to quote, quote 19th century or quote 18th century writing on government. So I know that the language is going to be crazy, but I'll translate it at the end and we can get this. And so this is Madralist from Federalist 62, which is actually a paper written about the Senate, but he jammed this in the end. He's talking about arbitrary government here. He says, great injury results from an unstable government. great injury results from an unstable government. The want of confidence in the public councils damps every useful undertaking, the success and profit of which may depend on the continuance of existing arrangements. What prudent merchant will hazard his fortunes in any new branch of commerce when he knows not but that his plans may be rendered unlawful before they can be executed? What farmer or manufacturer will lay himself out for the encouragement given to any particular cultivation or establishment when he can have no assurance that his preparatory labors and advances will not render him a victim to an inconsistent government? In other words, if government is not consistent and steady, then enterprising people, and I'm editorializing this a little bit, enterprising people of all kinds, whether you're straight, gay, a man, a woman, any kind of ethnicity, any age, any height, any weight, government of all or people of all kinds, everyone, there are people in every, you know, supposed subgroup of our society that our quote unquote leaders want us to be divided by, that are entrepreneurial, that want to create things, right? But if government is not consistent and steady, then enterprising people will be less likely to take the step to do something to improve all of our lives and enrich themselves at the same time. Arbitrary government, right? Government at one end saying, I'm going to do X, and at another end saying, I'm going to do Y. It winds up creating precedents that makes government unpredictable. Government should not be unpredictable. It should be predictable. This is consistent with what Madison and Hamilton wrote in other places in the Federalist Papers, where they discussed how the laws should not be so voluminous that they can't be understood. We have regulations on top of regulations on top of regulations. You know, I know that the Trump administration has reduced a number of eliminated, I believe, at least a number of regulations. And so we need more of that trend probably, because every year, former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld sends his tax return in with a note. And I this is a fabulous idea. He sends this note and he says, listen, IRS, I'm paraphrasing, this is my best guess. The laws are too much. I can't possibly understand them. My accountants can't possibly understand them. This is our best guess. Please treat me kindly. Right? And so it's voluminous laws and arbitrary government and a government that changes every 4 years because the regulatory state is so big now that one president can come in and wipe out what the previous president did. And so now the private sector is, okay, every 4 years, what's the regime we're going to live under? No, exactly the wrong thing, exactly setting up the precedent that will limit what enterprising people will do with their resources.
Well, and government is supposed to be impartial. Roger Bianco, let's go to break. When we come back, you know, the wisdom of James Madison and the founders back then it's absolutely astounding. And we have seen such a tap down to honor what these old white guys actually were trying to get done. So let's go to break. When we come back, this is the Kim Munson Show. Let's have a conversation with Roger Bianco regarding Here's to You, Mr. Madison. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Enjoy three movies under the stars, all for only $9. Angel Has Fallen, It, Chapter 2, and Scary Stories. The 88 Drive-In is moving to their fall schedule, so they will be open Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Thursday, but closed Tuesday and Wednesday. The box office opens at 6 p.m. Friday, Saturday, and 6:30 p.m. Sunday, Monday, Thursday. For more information, visit 88drivein.net.
All of Kim Munson's sponsors are an exclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's kimmunson.com.
Okay, welcome back. I am Kim Munson, and let's have a conversation with Roger Bianco, who is in studio, about your very important piece here. Arbitrary government is bad government, and here's to you, Mr. Madison. And Roger, in your piece, I recommend that people go to my website, kimmunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N, all O's on that. And you brought up something really interesting. You said when you were 13 years old and your sister was 15,
yeah.
You asked your father if you could go over to a friend's house. What happened?
So this is a little bit of the our last name ends in a vowel. And that culture back in the day had the Italian culture. Back in the day, at least in my home, I don't know if this was broad, but my father had a set of rules for my sister and a set of rules for me. Because he was very protective of my sister and figured I could figure it out, you know, just kind of a double standard, quite frankly. And so I asked my dad if I could go over to my buddy's house and stay there for my best friend in the world, who we still keep in close contact with, and stay there till about 10 o'clock. And I had just barely, I think, gotten my license. And he said, or no, I didn't. I was 13. I hadn't gotten my license. Somehow, I think, I can't remember how I was going to get over there, but I was going to get over there. And he said, sure, but you got to be back at 10 o'clock sharp, right? And my sister said, well, can I go over to, I think her friend's name was Jennifer, can I go over to Jennifer's home and stay there until 10 o'clock? And he said no to her. And
at the same time.
And so we were just kind of like, oh, okay.
So
was he
on like city council or something?
Yeah,
like that?
It was arbitrary, right? It was arbitrary. That was the point. And my sister and I were, you know, and as a parent or as a child, you're subject to that. You're subject to the arbitrary kind of whims of your parents. And but as adults, we shouldn't be subject to the arbitrary whims of government. I mean, we're adults. We're thinking. To me, this whole thing, this whole discussion of government engineering society and creating, making people live in certain areas and trying to engineer the environmentally appropriate city and all this stuff, it boils down to one thing, which is trust. I was listening to, they don't trust us. The people who get into government, I don't think that they're bad people, many of them. Some of them do get into government positions and they bring kind of a sense of self-righteousness that they have the correct way to do it. And so they want to drive.
And you can see that from both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, you can see it from both sides of the aisle, to be absolutely fair. That is correct. That is absolutely correct. And so, I don't know, I think there's probably some good people who really want to genuinely help others, but I just don't think that government is the proper entity to do it because government has that element of force. And I want to be trusted. I know what's right for my family. I know what's right for my children. I know what's right for us. My wife knows what's right for us. Regarding environmental stuff, Jordan Peterson listened to a podcast of his this weekend, and he made a point that if you really want to help the environment, get more wealthy people. Was basically his point. And he not even wealthy, just global middle class, which is like $5,000-$6,000 a year in average annual income. That's poverty here, but in Malaysia it's a consistent paycheck. Get people and that at when they enter into global middle class, they start caring about the environment. The environment cleans up.
Well, and when you're just trying to survive, you don't really think a lot about the environment. For our health and hydrocarbon show that's brought to us by Liberty Oilfield Services, in looking at the moral case for fossil fuels, when you start to use fossil fuels and instead of, you know, burning wood or burning dung or things like that, which put particles up into the air, yeah. When you use fossil fuels, clean burning fossil fuels, it also frees up time. Typically, it's women that have to go out and gather, you know, the wood and the dung or, you know, go get water. And once you start to move into, as you mentioned, a global middle class, it frees up time so that women can go do other things.
Yeah, do other things and live healthier lives.
But see,
prosperous lives.
Roger, the problem with, and we're just about out of time, but what you really nailed is, it's, first of all, I want you to mention we had, you know, people just kind of try to tap down all of the founders, say, oh, they're old. They're just old
it's
white
old.
Guys.
Yeah.
How would you address that?
Well, you know how I would address it. I would address it. I think I've mentioned this before on the show, so I apologize for being redundant if I did. But I consider the founders' exercise in establishing our government kind of like Shakespeare. You know, Shakespeare wrote things and the plays that he wrote, the ideas there, the human concepts in there, like love, lust, benevolence, greed, fear, anger, anxiety, you know, the positives and the negatives of human emotion and the human condition back then apply today just as much as they did back then, even if not more. I think that's what the founders did. Madison warning us about arbitrary government and its negative effects we should pay attention to that. Just because something's old does not mean that it's not timeless, does not mean that it doesn't apply. Like Shakespeare applies today. So, and that's why we have hundreds of Shakespearean festivals every summer, every year in the United States. People still enjoy it because it applies. It resonates with human beings. There is a condition of human beings that is consistent through time. And I think that the government that, as far as I can tell, the government that our founders set up was consistent with human nature. And people used to have Tom Cranmer to talk about slavery because that's usually the pushback on that. The other thing is when they talk about how racist and sexist and bigoted the founders were, and then the whole founding has to be discounted. Okay, well, then there are no inevitable or there are no self-evident truths. Life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness are not good things. Then we should not have freedom of speech. We should not have freedom of assembly. Is that what you're saying? You want to kill what the founders did because that many of them wrongfully owned slaves. That ignores the big slavery question, but
slavery was prevalent throughout the world at that time.
Yeah, and she had Dr. Cranowitz around to talk about that because he does a great job of setting that record straight. In other words, it's timeless. I would say you must consider that it's timeless, and it is to our peril to blow that stuff out.
It is to our peril, and the founders, what they put together is arbitrary government picking winners and losers, no matter what kind of package and whatever kind of bow you put on it. Yeah. Is not a good idea, and ultimately then it comes down to force. So, Roger Bianco, it has really been great to have you in studio. I love your piece that is at kimmunson.com. That's MONSON.com. Thank you so much for being here in our inaugural kickoff on this whole new
Congratulations.
Adventure.
Congratulations. Fun stuff. Well, kimmunson.com.
You got it. So thank you so much. And our quote for today is James Madison. He said, "It is of great importance in a republic not only to guard the society against the oppression of its rulers, but to guard one part of the society against the injustice of the other part."
Yep.
Okay, so today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.